From the WVXU studios, this is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Mark Haney. It hasn't happened in 99 years, but August 21st, the United States will experience a total eclipse of the sun. A path of total darkness will cover the country from Newport, Oregon to McClellanville, South Carolina. The closest city to Cincinnati to fully experience the total eclipse is Hopkinsville, Kentucky, which is about 4 hours to the south. And joining us to discuss the eclipse and to answer your questions about it are Sky and Telescope Senior Editor Kelly Beatty, Dr. Wes Ryle, who manages the BB&T Observatory at Thomas More College, and Cincinnati Observatory Assistant Director and Outreach Astronomer and co-host of the PBS series Stargazers, Dean Regas. And if you have any questions about the eclipse, give us a call at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Kelly, Wes, and Dean, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, great pleasure.
As astronomers, how cool is this, Dean?
Oh, this is our Super Bowl. This is the best thing that can ever happen to us because this is what we get excited about. This is what we're in this business for, is seeing a total solar eclipse. I don't want to exaggerate, but this is the coolest thing you will ever see in your life.
Yeah, Wes?
And that's absolutely true. It's something that gets the public interested, which is something that we're all interested in, getting people excited about astronomy, getting people excited about science, and getting out and actually looking at the sky.
Yeah, how much public interest is there in this, Kelly? How much are you seeing?
Well, wow. It's like all eclipse all the time right now here at the offices of Sky and Telescope in Cambridge, Massachusetts. I think the thing is that, you know, like the last total solar eclipse was in March of last year, and it was over Indonesia. I mean, a few islands outside of the rest of the Pacific were the only dry land you could go to see this eclipse. That's not something most people are going to want to do. Here we have one literally in our backyard. Not only is there more than 10 million people directly in the path, but something like 200 million people in the United States are within a day's drive of the path of totality. You guys there in Cincinnati, you head down the road and head to Bowling Green, I know you mentioned Hopkinsville,
yeah.
Less than 3.5 hours down the road, and you're in the path of totality. And a lot of people are thinking just like that. I've never seen one. It's a day trip. Let's do it.
Yeah. Has anybody in the group ever experienced a total eclipse like this? Have you seen one, Dean?
I've seen one. The only one I saw was in the Mediterranean Sea in 2006. We were on a eclipse cruise. So we left from Athens, Greece, cruised around the Mediterranean Sea, and then on eclipse day, they parked the boat and waited for the eclipse to happen.
What about you, Wes? Have you?
I actually have not experienced a total
Me
solar
neither.
Eclipse. I've seen a partial and an annular, but not a total solar eclipse.
Kelly is a veteran. How many will this be for you, Kelly?
Yeah, I'm going to bring up the class average here. I've seen 12 totals and 6 annulars. So,
wow.
This is something that, well, I've been on the staff here for quite a long time. But as Dean points out, it's one of those must-haves if you're going to be an astronomer.
Yeah, and I pull the average down a little bit because I've seen neither a total nor a partial.
Well, 12? Why bother seeing another one, Kelly? It's just another one, right?
Because they are all like snowflakes, Dean. You know, the sun goes through this 11-year-long cycle of activity. Right now it's kind of on the downside. And when that happens, the appearance of the sun's atmosphere, the corona, I mean, who knew the sun had an atmosphere? But it does, and you can only see it during a total eclipse. And it looks different every time. Sometimes it's got streaks in it. Sometimes it's round and blobby. Sometimes it's, fatter on one side than the other. But it's always amazing. Pictures just don't do it justice. It's one of these things where the eyeball is a much better, it gives you a much better impression of what's really going on.
Wes, how common are total eclipses of the sun?
So eclipses in general usually happen a few times a year. But as they were saying, it's a rare event in order to actually witness them because you have to be at the right location on the Earth. There are two types of solar eclipses, total solar eclipses and annular solar eclipses. And that all depends on how far the moon is away from the Earth. If the moon's a little bit closer, it can totally block the sun, which is what we're going to get here in August. And so that even makes it a little bit more rare just because it has this special condition of the moon. moon being able to completely cover the sun.
Okay. So, yeah, Dean, explain that process a little bit more to us about what's causing the eclipse.
Yeah, so you have to get all these three bodies lined up just almost perfectly. You have the sun 93 million miles away. You have the moon 240,000 miles away. And you have to line them up at the moment where the moon is new. I mean, it's just perfect to get everything lined up just like that. It doesn't happen very often. Most of the time, the moon is not in the right spot. It doesn't go around the Earth in the same plane. It's kind of tilted. So most of the time, you don't have eclipses. But on these special moments where everything's lined up just perfectly, the moon can just barely block out the entire sun. That's what's other part that's so cool, is that the moon is barely big enough to block out the sun on some occasions. Sometimes, like,
and that's when you get a partial eclipse, right?
Yeah, so sometimes the moon's a little farther from us and it won't be big enough. It won't appear big enough to block out the whole sun.
Now, how far out can astronomers predict these? How long ago did they map this particular one out?
They can map it out hundreds of years in advance. It's actually a very detailed science and very precise science. And it's actually something that people have been doing for thousands of years. You can actually go back to ancient civilizations, and they were able to predict the coming of eclipses. Not quite as accurately as we do today, but still with some certainty.
Yeah, there's a great website. Yeah. Mr. Eclipse has a great website that he lists all the eclipses all the way to the year 3000 and going back to 2000 BC. And so from that, I've found that
Mr. Eclipse.
Okay. Yeah, he's a little obsessed. It's possible. That's where I found that Cincinnati's only total solar eclipse that I could find was in the year 1395, and that Cincinnati will not have one before the year 3000. Mr. Eclipse would not go past 3000 for me. I asked him, could you check in the future? He said, nope, I'm done.
Hotel rooms are booking up now.
That's,
you know,
right.
The thing is, you mentioned the ancients being able to do this. We can see records as far back as about 2000 BC for predictions of eclipses. And the reason is that although it seems a little random when you look at a world map of all the eclipse paths, every 18 years, 11 days, and 8 hours, the sun, moon, and Earth come back into almost exactly the same geometric arrangement. And that's called a Saros. That's your word of the day, S-A-R-O-S. And these Saros cycles were known to the ancients, and although they couldn't, as Dean was saying, they might not be able to predict them exactly, they had an inkling that something was going on. Still, you know, they didn't know exactly where and when. And you can imagine the just awe and fear that you would have if you were, you know, just doing your business in, say, ancient Egypt, and the sun were to be covered over an hour and a half by the moon, and everything went dark. How scary would that be? Today, we can tell you within a second, a fraction of a second, when these things are going to happen, and they're still awesome events. So just being able to know that they're coming, that doesn't take anything away from the majesty and spectacle that a lot of us are going to see on eclipse day, if you're in the path of totality.
What about people outside the path of totality, Kelly? What will they be able to experience?
You know, they're still going to experience a partial eclipse of the sun. Everywhere in North America is going to be a deep partial eclipse that day. And what that means is that the moon is going to cross the sun just off center. So in Cincinnati, for example, the path is pretty good. You're going to see about three-quarters of the sun covered. I'm looking at the wrong map. You're going to see like 90% of the sun covered, and that's great. So even though it won't be complete, you are going to see a couple of weird things, and I'll leave it to Dean or others to explain this, but when the moon mostly covers the sun, shadows get sharper. You'll see that it's probably the light is a little dimmer at 90%. And also, if you look carefully, the light has a kind of silvery quality to it. I still haven't figured out why that is, but lots of people record that the light has a kind of silvery metallic quality to it. It's very weird and something really looking that you should look forward to.
Yeah, and I think when you get to a 90% eclipse like we'll have here in Cincinnati, you're going to see the light come through leaves a very strange way. They'll make little crescents on the ground. It'll be like a pinhole projector, essentially. The light coming through the leaves will leave impressions, and you'll see crescent suns on the ground. It's really trippy.
A lot of people think that you need special equipment in order to be able to view a solar eclipse, but that's not really true at all. Like Dean said, you can use the environment. You can use the light filtering down through the leaves, a simple pinhole projector where you just punch a little piece of cardboard with a hole in it and let the sunlight through. You can even use things like a colander or a sieve and let the sunlight shine through, and you'll be able to see the sun's image projected.
A Ritz cracker works also.
Holes on the Ritz cracker will work.
And we'll have to go back over this advice toward the end of the show, too, to make sure people know how to get the most out of this particular experience. When did people...
Well, this is where we have to say, do not, capital D, capital N, look directly at the sun during this eclipse or any time. Because even though...
Always a bad idea.
You know, always a bad idea. Even though 90% of it is covered, it is still staggeringly bright, and you will hurt your eyes and potentially damage them permanently if you try to observe these crescents, this crescent sun partially covered by the moon, just with your unaided eye. Lots and lots of places have available what are called solar filters, which allow you to safely look through them. It's like the darkest sunglasses you've ever seen. They are only good for looking at the sun. But do not use sunglasses for this. They are not dark enough. The damage will still occur.
Kelly, do you know when people started looking at eclipses as natural occurrences versus the looking at it as something like a predictor of the end of times or doom and gloom to come?
Yeah, I would... I would say probably in the 1800s, Edmund Halley very famously predicted an eclipse that was going to cross England, and I'm trying to remember the date but can't, and he started asking people to make observations at that time. There's a phenomenon, certain phenomena happened during totality leading up to and afterward when the moon's surface, for example, is not a perfect sphere. It's lumpy, and there's mountains and valleys, and along the edge, it's a little bit irregular. So a lot of observers realized that the last little bit of sun to disappear and the first to reappear during a total eclipse was not a simple little crescent, but it was like little beads of light. And Sir Francis Bailey famously gushed on and on about these, and they came to be called Bailey's beads. So these are telling us something about the moon in addition to something about the sun. The other thing I want to point out is that the element helium was discovered not on the Earth, but during a total eclipse of the sun. In the spectrum of the sun, there was this strange emission, single orange wavelength of light, that could only be due to something that no one had ever seen before. It came to be called helium, after Helios, the sun, and the rest, they say, is history.
And we will continue our conversation. You can join us with your eclipse questions and comments at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. 2 weeks until the total eclipse of the sun, and here to answer your questions are Sky and Telescope senior editor Kelly Beatty, Dr. Wes Ryle, who manages the BB&T Observatory at Thomas More College, and Cincinnati Observatory assistant director and outreach astronomer and co-host of the PBS series Stargazers, Dean Regas. You can join us with your questions about the eclipse, 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Dean, you were talking about how this area will have 90% of the eclipse. We'll be able to observe 90% of it going on. What's the difference between 90% and totality?
Well, yeah, on the surface, 90%, that sounds pretty good,
sounds
right?
Sounds pretty good,
That's an A. You might as well do
that. You complain about being able to see 90% of this.
Well, 90% is definitely not 90% of a total eclipse, because seeing a total eclipse is so off the charts awesome that it's not even in the same ballpark. Just for instance, the amount of light coming through to you here in Cincinnati at 90% eclipsed is still about 100,000 times brighter than the light you'll see during the total eclipse. So percentage-wise, we're talking this is nothing compared to a total eclipse. Definitely a good partial like this is cool. You'll get some of the light effects like Kelly mentioned, but there is no comparison to a total eclipse.
Wes, does this have any impact on the weather while the eclipse is going on?
Usually, not with weather systems. You'll notice a big drop in temperature. Even at the 90% coverage, you will notice a slight drop in temperature. But definitely, if you're in totality, there'll be a drop. But the effect is kind of rather short-lived in terms of the shadow passing over, and so it doesn't have a huge effect on the weather. People do sometimes report about animals actually bedding down and things like that. This one's going to be pretty short. The actual length of totality is a maximum, I think, 2 minutes and 40 seconds. And so you might see some strange behavior. But not anything too out of the ordinary.
So not much of an impact on the weather, so to speak. Does it get kind of still, Kelly, when you experience these?
Yeah, and in fact, a lot of people who've never seen a total eclipse before have this vision that they want to be off by themselves, you know, in quiet solitude, and that's just not the way to do it. You want to be in the middle of a big party because it's very exciting. So what happened afterward, though, is that an awe kind of overtakes you and the crowd. As Wes mentioned, it does get a little cooler. Sometimes cumulus clouds that are in the sky kind of dissipate, and you actually see more clear sky than you otherwise might. The temperature does drop a little bit. Wind will tend to die down. All of those things. That's why it's a multi-sensory experience. It's not just about what your eyes see. It your ears and your sense of feeling I don't know about smell so much, but anyway, it's definitely a multi-sensory experience.
We had a phone call from Tracy. She wanted to know if there's any idea of how many people damage their eyes by looking at a solar eclipse.
Yeah, I don't think there's – I think that's a little bit of a tale that people actually get – you know, I've never heard of anybody actually gone, you know, their eyes damaged from this. I think we do a really good job of protecting people, and everybody can remember their mom and dad tell them, don't look at the sun.
Right.
You don't ever want to look at the sun, eclipse or no eclipse.
Kelly just told us this too.
Exactly.
Don't do it.
So I think that's pretty common knowledge that people don't do it. I think people are tempted during eclipses, but I don't really think that's a big issue. Because one thing I'd like to send a message to all the principals and administrators that are in school that day, that they get afraid that their kids will go outside and stare at the sun and go blind and their parents will sue them. And instead, they cancel recess and don't let the kids go out at all. So principals out there, please trust your kids. They know not to look at the sun. It's not like they'll go blinder if they look at the sun now. So let them out and teach the teachers how to look at it safely.
Dean, that's exactly what happened to me in middle school.
Uh-huh.
We were not allowed to go outside during a solar eclipse. We could just see it get dimmer outside the window. And I'm still bitter about that. And that's one of the reasons why I'm going to be traveling to see this one.
That's right. Train your teachers. Give them 5 minutes of training. The kids will stay safe.
You know, there is something I want to mention in terms of how you might inadvertently get your eyes really damaged. And that is, we've talked about these viewers, these eclipse viewers for looking at the sun. Suppose I have a telescope or a pair of binoculars. I know all your listeners are waiting to ask this question. Can I put those glasses on and then look through the telescope or binoculars? No, don't do that, because the concentrated sunlight will literally melt through the plastic, and you'll suddenly get a intense burst of sunlight that you hadn't expected. I think that's the greatest danger. Somebody inadvertently looking through binoculars or a telescope, filtered or not, that with the full strength of the sun shining through, and that would definitely be a problem.
Kelly, how are scientists gearing up to study this particular event?
With eager anticipation, I think. You know, we have, I mentioned the eclipse in Indonesia where there was very little land. Here we have a stretch of about 3,000 miles where the moon's shadow will move over a course of 90 minutes at supersonic speed all across our continent. And many scientists have set up kind of stations all along the path, because during that 90 minutes, you can literally watch this corona, the atmosphere of the sun, and other phenomena evolve. We've never really been able to do it that way before. Here we are, this, you know, internet completely wired, technologically advanced country, and astronomers are really pulling out all the stops to try to study the inner corona, especially like never before. It's an odd thing. The surface of the sun, what we see as the surface, has a temperature of about 11,000 degrees Fahrenheit, and yet this inner corona is 2 million degrees. How the heck does that happen? Astronomers want to know the answer, and so we're giving them their best chance during this eclipse in 2 weeks.
And so I actually listened to a talk from a participant in Citizen KATE is what it's called. KATE stands for Continental American Telescopic Eclipse, and this is put together by the National Solar Observatory. And they've distributed telescopes to folks, like you said, all across the nation, and they're going to splice together the videos that they get from all those participants in order to make a 90-minute consecutive video of the inner corona. And it's something that we actually can't get with space telescopes. We can get the outer corona with space telescopes, but this is something a little bit new.
Yeah, great opportunity for citizen science on this. Anybody with the phone can take a picture through some welder's glass or through the eclipse glasses and get some info.
Kelly, you mentioned helium was discovered because of an eclipse. Any thoughts as to whether are scientists looking for the next element or anything like that?
No, I think it really a lot of their efforts are focused on the changes that they can detect in the corona. We know that this corona, because it's superheated ionized gas, is kind of controlled by the very powerful magnetic field of the sun. And so by watching for changes, they're literally going to be able to see how the sun's magnetic field is changing. And that might give some clue as to why it becomes so hot. What are the forces that are heating up this corona? As I said, it's really going to be an unprecedented opportunity for them. I don't anticipate any new elements being discovered. I wouldn't be surprised if some people are looking for objects orbiting very close to the sun during this eclipse. Back in 1878 and before, it was hypothesized that there was another planet inside the orbit of Mercury. They even gave it a name, Vulcan. They were so sure that it existed. Turns out not to be the case. We know there's nothing in there larger than in like 20 or 30 miles, but there could be something. And maybe all these cameras turned that way will turn up something this time around.
So Dean, live long and prosper.
Live long and prosper, okay. Kelly.
Yep. We got an email from Gary. He was wondering if anybody had any tips on how to photograph the eclipse or the landscape, for that matter, during the eclipse.
Well, I think the easiest is going to be the partial eclipse will be easy if you get those eclipse shades or those number 14 welder's glasses that are safe to look at the sun with the naked eye. You just put your smartphone's chip up and you put the glass right in front of it and you can take some pictures. And if you couldn't put it on a tripod, that's even better. That's about the simplest way. Photographing the totality is going to be really tough because of you have to change your exposures.
No, yeah, you got no light at all.
The light changes so quickly. So photographing the partial is good, and you should practice ahead of time. But for the totality, if it's your first one, the advice that was given to me on my first one was don't waste your time looking at your camera. Look at it yourself.
Enjoy the experience.
And because leave the pictures to the experts that want to do that. Somebody gave me the advice. They said, don't bother taking a picture. Mine will be better than yours. Look at it with your eye.
Kelly, we got a question from Pat who wanted to know if anyone's going to be testing Einstein's theory of relativity during the eclipse.
Oh, Pat, what a perceptive question that is. The answer is absolutely yes. Both professionals and amateurs are going to be trying to test that. And the way this works, getting back to Mercury for a second, Mercury's orbit was shifting in a way that didn't make any sense. That's what led to this prediction that there was another planet in there. But it turns out that Einstein's general theory of relativity predicts not only that Mercury's orbit will shift, but that stars in the sky very close to the sun during an eclipse should be displaced from their regular locations by a very tiny amount just due to the warping of space-time near the sun. So a series of professional and this was proven during a total eclipse in 1919 by Sir Arthur Eddington. And it turns out that a couple of amateur astronomers and professional astronomers are going to try to replicate Eddington's experiment by taking pictures of stars near the sun during the total eclipse, measuring how much they're offset from where they should be, and use that to calculate whether relativity actually exists or not. And I wish them luck. I think they're going to succeed.
So when is the next total eclipse of the sun going to occur?
Well, in the United States, it's hard to think past this August 21st. But anyway, I'll try to get past this one.
Just in case you missed this one.
In case you missed this one. Oh, don't even say that. I don't even think that. But okay, April 8th, 2024 is the next one that'll go through most of the United States. It's going to be coming from Texas right up towards Ohio and go through Dayton, Cleveland, Buffalo, and Montreal out that way. So that's going to be one of the closest total solar eclipses to Cincinnati in a long time.
But that's not going to be like this one, which is coast to coast, right?
Not quite coast to coast. Yeah, from Mexico up through Canada.
Go ahead, Kelly.
Top to bottom.
Yeah.
The next one anywhere is going to be on July 2nd of 2019. And the reason that's important, for people who are seeing their first total eclipse, we have this saying, the first four words out of their mouth is, when's the next one? And so the next one is July 2nd, 2019, and it will be crossing central Chile and Argentina down in South America. So if you've always wanted to go to Chile and enjoy the food and wine and great people down there, this is your chance. But start booking now, because already the hotel rooms are getting very few and far between down there.
So an eclipse is a good excuse to travel, eh?
Absolutely.
Yes. And we have to warn people that once they see one, they will become hooked. This is an addictive thing. It's like a rush. And afterwards, you're like, I must have that again. That's what Kelly's done with his whole life. Right, Kelly?
Exactly. I have seen eclipses from three different places in Africa, from three cruise ships, three airplanes. I've been over the North Pole, the South Pole, and Libya, for example. And it's just a fantastic way to see parts of the world that you wouldn't otherwise, and get a little science in there, too.
Can't overstate how lucky we are to have two total solar eclipses 7 years apart for a lot of people in America, and to have them so close, just 7 years apart.
Now, Kelly, in the next part of the show, we'll be finding some more about Hopkinsville, Kentucky, which is one of the closer cities to Cincinnati that's in the path of totality. You've actually got a tour that you're going to lead down there, right?
Yes, Sky and Telescope has two tours, each with about 200 people. I'm leading the one to Hopkinsville. We have another one in eastern Wyoming, excuse me. So I'll have a lot of new friends with lots of questions, I'm sure. A lot of the places along the path of totality have been completely sold out for more than a year, and so people are latching on to tours like ours in an effort to get into the path of totality any way they can. And we're hoping for clear skies. Our weather prospects in Hopkinsville aren't as good as I would like them to be, but it's at least about 50-50. And so we're hoping for clear skies that day. We're going to have a blast no matter what.
Well, Kelly, we'll say goodbye to you at this point. Thank you so much, and enjoy the eclipse in a couple of weeks.
Mark, it's been a great pleasure, and I wish you clear skies there in Cincinnati. I know you'll have a lot of people calling in giving you their impressions as well.
Sky and Telescope Senior Editor Kelly Beatty. When we come back, we'll find out how Hopkinsville, Kentucky plans to celebrate the eclipse. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, along with Wes Ryle, who manages the BB&T Observatory at Thomas More College, and Cincinnati Observatory Assistant Director and Outreach Astronomer Dean Regas. When the eclipse happens August 21st, a 70-mile-wide swath of the country from coast to coast is going to be in total darkness. The nearest city to Cincinnati that falls on this eclipse path of totality is Hopkinsville, Kentucky. And joining us now from Hopkinsville is Brooke Young, the city's solar eclipse marketing and events consultant. You can join us 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Brooke, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Hey, what a cool job title. How did that happen?
It is. You know, this is such an amazing experience and such a wonderful opportunity, and I am grateful every day that I get to talk about the solar eclipse. So actually, I was living here locally working for our Chamber of Commerce and wrote a letter to the mayor and kind of pitched this position as something that I thought would be necessary as we progressed closer to the eclipse, and it has proved to be just that. It has been a great opportunity to funnel all of the information that we are coordinating here on the city level and the county level, as well as connecting a lot of the different pieces of the puzzle here here locally for bringing all of these plans to fruition for August 21st and that weekend leading up to it.
Brooke, how much more intense has the attention and the focus gotten on Hopkinsville from, say, national media and around the country?
Oh, it's been absolutely amazing. I don't think that any of us could have imagined the level of just attention. Just like you said, I don't think we could have imagined how much attention this would bring to our community. You know, we're a pretty small community. Within the city limits, we're about a population of 32,000, and within the county, about 70,000. And we have national media outlets and international media outlets coming from all over to cover this event from our community so that the world can really see what we're seeing here in Hopkinsville. And it's been such a tremendous response and excitement level. You know, this is something that's so fun that we are having such a great time with, and we have really adopted our new name of Eclipseville that we're rebranding ourselves as for the weekend. And it's just been so, I mean, you can just see the sense of pride on our local residents' faces when we talk about the eclipse and talk about this event coming and rolling out the red carpet to welcome people from all over the world. It truly is such a unique and a wonderful opportunity.
How many people is Hopkinsville expecting, Brooke?
So overall, we anticipate that we'll have about 100,000 people coming to our area. So, you know, making plans for all of those folks. You know, the big question we get is how people are going to get here. You know, traffic and transportation and, you know, schools and transporting that segment of folks. So actually, our schools will be canceled that day. So we actually will have no schools actually Monday or Tuesday following the eclipse. And our traffic plans, we have been working very closely with our local law enforcement folks to make sure we can get all 100,000 of those individuals to where they want to watch the eclipse so that they have a wonderful experience.
How long ago did the community notice hotel rooms were starting to fill up?
Well, that's a great question. And, you know, hotels have been a big question on a lot of folks' minds. We've had people say, oh, Hopkinsville's been sold out of hotel rooms for years. And actually, we do still even have hotel rooms left today if people are interested. We have a few that are still remaining, but people just have to contact our local hotels directly. And so that was the big confusion, was because they weren't listed on all of these travel websites that we're so used to searching for all of our hotels on. So all of our hotels have been booked internally. And so, you know, I feel like the first calls begin coming to the community about 10 years ago. So think about how long our community has known about this event. But really, I think the interest in the people wanting to book really started to pick up about a year and a half ago is when the reservations really started pouring in.
Any idea, has anybody tried to measure or given any estimates, Brooke, of how much economic impact this could have for Hopkinsville?
We have, you know, and again, that's a hard number to calculate because like so much of this, you know, we're really kind of writing this guidebook and this rule book as we go along. So much of this has kind of just been every day we put a new piece of the puzzle into place. And so with regards to economic impact, we estimate that it'll be about $30 million, which is a tremendous number for our community. And that could even be on the low end, because when we talk about 100,000 people coming to the community, that just means that each of them is going to spend $300 here with us, which is very conservative with regards to, you know, folks coming in and wanting to purchase food and drinks and souvenirs and different things throughout the community that day. So that number even could be exponentially higher just based on what we anticipate with regards to visitors that day.
So obviously, like you were saying, it's going to be a boost for the souvenir business, the collectible business. What are some of the cool goodies? What are some of the cool goodies that are popping up around the eclipse?
Oh my goodness, everything you can think of. So we have so many awesome local vendors that have jumped on board and have created the coolest stuff. Everything from, you know, your t-shirts and hats and keychains to more exotic things. Like we have one local distillery that has actually sent corn up into space on one of the NASA payloads with a local university. And once it came back down, they have been distilling moonshine with it, and they're making moonshine that's literally out of this world. So they are having a great time with this. This moonshine that literally has been closer to the moon than many of us will ever go. So just really having a great time with the marketing and promotion. We've got folks that are making cornhole boards and, you know, framed prints of different local iconic areas that have the eclipse, you know, superimposed on there, and posters, and just some really incredible things that people can purchase and commemorate their experience with us here in Hopkinsville.
I think it's great that this the town has embraced this scientific event. And do you think it'll really like impact a lot of the students there? I mean, because yeah, they don't have the school. I think this is. Do you think it's going to be pretty memorable for them?
Absolutely. And I have to commend our school district. They've done such a tremendous job of incorporating solar eclipse information and studies into the curriculum throughout the entire school year last year, and even going so far as to, you know, the first few weeks of school, they actually start back tomorrow. And so the first few weeks here that they have, they're going to be talking about the solar eclipse, and they're really approaching it from all angles. So not just the science, but also, you know, what this means to our community with regards to logistics and planning, and, you know, how the students have actually come up with different items that they think could be helpful solar viewers, or, you know, different ways that they can tie in many different areas of study. And so I hope that we see this has sparked a love and interest in science and technology. And, you know, we also really hope that this sticks with these students. You know, I'll never forget when I was in third grade in 1994, there was a partial annular eclipse that was visible from my elementary school. And I remember making the pinhole projector and going out into the parking lot and viewing it. And that's something that is a very vivid memory for me. So hopefully this is something that can be that for these students here in our community as well.
Brooke, what's this I hear about Hopkinsville and Little Green Men?
Oh, yes. Well, this is a wonderful story. And so on August 21st of 1955, so if you think about that, August 21st, 62 years to the day before
the
solar eclipse
yeah.
is taking place, to the day. I mean, we can't make this up. To the day before the solar eclipse, one of the most documented and reported cases of alien encounters happened right here in Christian County. So a little community called Kelly, which is just right outside of the Hopkinsville city limits, but still inside Christian County, they have a documented report. And this is something that has been studied and just really thoroughly investigated over many different avenues and throughout the last 62 years. That aliens landed in Hopkinsville, and it was little, they actually were silver, but the name of the town is Kelly, and so the Kelly Green Men have kind of adapted from this story and every how it's all kind of come together.
It's not the mascot of the football team, is it? The little the Kelly Green Men?
Oh, it's not.
They should do
that. Would be a wonderful. I think we should suggest that.
All right, we'll work on that.
Are you planning on dressing up for the eclipse, you know, in alien gear?
Oh, they have that. They have a 38-foot spaceship that's actually on site out there.
And it's in the park, right?
They have so much fun with it. It is. It's in the park. They've got folks that dress up. They even have a documentary that's coming out this year. And then they do the retelling of the story because they are descendants of the folks. I think the daughter or granddaughter of one of the individuals that witnessed this does a retelling of this every year at the festival. So this is actually an annual festival that they have every year. And this year just so happens, obviously, to coincide with the solar eclipse. And the date, obviously, is such a huge part of what is making this so unique and iconic. And you know, they have said, is that were they coming those 62 years ago just to kind of scope out their seat for the solar eclipse?
Yeah, coincidence or not.
Exactly.
Brooke, what's your advice for someone who's headed down on the 21st?
Well, my advice would be if you can't head down earlier, head down as early as you possibly can. You know, we obviously would love to encourage everyone to come throughout the weekend and have a great time with us. We've got over 20 festivals planned throughout the entire weekend, everything from a downtown summer salute festival, which has live music taking place over 3 days and more food vendors than have ever been in our community before, you know, making sure we have all of these wonderful opportunities for our visitors. We've got a Comic-Con event taking place. I mean, you name it. We're really trying to offer a variety of opportunities for our visitors.
Sounds like you're really into it.
Yes, it's been so fun. But if you are just coming down on the 21st, I highly recommend having a plan. You know, we have all of these designated viewing areas, and that's where I suggest people making reservations to call and book somewhere in advance so that you're not ended up on the side of the road. You know, we're really discouraging people from pulling over on the side of the road for safety reasons and just for overall, you know, traffic flow to make sure people are staying safe and that our law enforcement's able to accommodate the best they can. But also, you know, you want to make sure you're in an area where you'll have access to food and restrooms and make sure that you're not at a location that's going to have the lights on. So, you know, we are really doing our best and trying to provide the best experience for visitors that are able to make it to one of these viewing locations and really get a wonderful experience.
Do you have a countdown clock going, Brooke?
I do. I'm looking at it right this second, actually. We actually have these countdown clocks across the state of Kentucky. So we have a big countdown, and it counts down to the second. So nothing really brings that sense of urgency like seeing the seconds tick away, you know?
Yeah, just like I have one in my kitchen. I think everybody has those, don't they?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh,
okay, I guess I'm the only one who does it.
Yeah.
Well, I've been looking forward to this for 17 years. So that's when I put my time off at work. I said, told the observatory I'm off this day. So I have seniority on this one.
Brooke, thank you so much
that's
for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Brooke Young, Solar Eclipse Marketing and Events Consultant for Hopkinsville, Kentucky. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, along with Dean Regas and Wes Ryle. And if you have any questions about the eclipse or any comments, give us a call at 513-419-7100. You can also email talk@wvxu.org. So, gentlemen, let's get your thoughts on this and your advice for how to enjoy this experience the most.
Oh, man, I cannot wait. I'm actually getting kind of nervous about this. Now that we're only 2 weeks away, I've been looking forward to this for so long. I just can't wait to get to the spot where I'm going to be, where it's – I think Brooke was right. Getting wherever you're going to go early is important because I think traffic could be a factor. Weather, of course, is a factor. But it doesn't matter if you're right in Hopkinsville or dead center. As long as you're somewhere in the path of totality, that's the important part. As long as you experience a little bit of totality, doesn't matter where, just somewhere in that path.
And I should real quickly point out, too, that as Kelly was pointing out, didn't realize that Bowling Green, Kentucky was also in the path of totality.
Yes.
So that's close as well.
North of Nashville, south of St. Louis. There's lots of places within a day's drive, definitely.
And that's where I'm going to be heading. I'm going to be heading down to just south of Bowling Green in Franklin, Kentucky. You can get an idea of how good of an event it is when all the astronomers are leaving town in order to go see totality.
Exactly. Yeah, we feel a little guilty leaving our observatories, but this is just too cool to see.
Yeah, it's something that doesn't come along very often. So it is very, very cool to see. You both were talking about how you've been getting a lot of questions from people.
Yeah, today at the observatory, we've had calls from West Virginia, Northeast Ohio,
really?
Indiana. They're all asking, you know, where
all over
to
the
go.
Country, pretty much.
Yeah, and one common thing that actually we've gotten a lot is, you know, so I live somewhere that's not if I live in Ohio, can I see it? Do I have to go to Cincinnati? Do I have to go farther south? The entire country will see a partial eclipse. So you can go to some NASA websites that list kind of a interactive map of where the eclipse will be, and it'll tell you exactly when the eclipse starts for you and how much of the sun will be blocked out. So, yeah, as long as you can see a shadow outside, then you can see the eclipse if you're looking at the right time.
And both of our organizations are going to be hosting public events. At Thomas More, we're going to have a couple of spaces that are available for people to attend. Just because if it's clear, we're expecting quite a big crowd. They can either go directly to the BB&T Observatory or the softball field for Thomas More. That's a much wider open space. And so we'll have solar eclipse viewing glasses available. We'll have telescopes with filters available. And that's free and open to the public. No reservations required.
Yeah, and same at the observatory. We're going to be open from noon to 4 that day. The eclipse goes from about 1 to a little bit before 4. And, yeah, we'll have eclipse glasses and safe ways to view and no admission for us either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is kind of a mid-morning event. I mean, if you're in Oregon, it's going to start about 9 o'clock your time, from what I understand. If you're in South Carolina on the other side of the country, it's going to start around 1:16 in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm. And right. for us, it's about 1 to 4.
Yep,
mm-hmm.
1 to 4. And then maximum eclipse in Cincinnati is about 2:30 in the afternoon. That's when the 91% of the sun will be blocked out.
Yeah, I think that's what – Imana, is that how you say it?
Yes.
Okay. I think that's what you wanted to talk about was best times for viewing.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, if you're working and you can't get the day off because everybody else got the day off, I guess you can just pop outside and you should view something around 2 o'clock.
Oh, yeah. You don't need much time. I mean, you have 3 hours and or almost 3 hours for it to view it. Of course, it's a little better. I'd say probably between 2 and 3 would be the best time. But, yeah, just to check it out, even just take a couple minutes to look at it. You can look through the window if you have the eclipse glasses to look safely. And, yeah, if you have a window, then just get a pinhole piece or put a hole in a piece of paper, let the sunlight come through in your office, you'll see a crescent.
Oh, perfect. All right. Thank you so much.
And share it with your coworkers, too. I think, you know, you could use it as a little break, too.
That's right. Thank you.
Thank you so much for the call. 513-419-7100 if you have any questions about the eclipse. And let's talk to Rick. Hi, Rick.
Hi. I was wondering, if you don't have the ability to take time off to see it, are there any internet websites where they might have good pictures and things to see after the fact?
Okay. Thank you, Rick.
Oh, yeah, there's going to be no shortage of those. I think if you just look up 2017 eclipse webcasts, live webcasts, I know NASA's doing some. I know other observatories are doing some.
There's an organization called SLOOH, S-L-O-O-H, that does a lot of live feed for astronomical events, and I'm sure they'll be doing something for the eclipse as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw the one from last year that was in Indonesia. They had one there, and you could watch it, and you can hear the people yelling in the background. And, yeah, because they usually have some audio with it, too, because it's a pretty amazing event.
Hey, Dean, where do people get the eclipse glasses? Where are those from?
Right now, you can get some of the eclipse glasses at hardware stores.
They're in pretty high demand, I would imagine.
They're very limited supplies. And so the observatory does have a limited supply, too. You can get some there. So we're open Monday through Friday, 12 to 4. But a lot of the online stores are sold out. It's one of those phenomenons that they tried to prepare for, and the response has been really amazing. So you can pick them up at the observatory between 12 and 4 Monday through Friday while supplies last.
And I've heard a lot of local libraries actually have some available, and so that might be a place to check. Again, they're probably starting to run out at this point. And at our event at Thomas More College, we have about 700 glasses that we have. We're probably going to ask people, you know, if it's a big crowd, to wear them while they're there and return them on their way out. But we should have enough to accommodate everybody.
And welder's glass, where do you get that kind of material?
So the welder's glass is a very specific shade. You want number 14.
Can't just be any welder's
glass? It's one of the darkest shades you could get. And so it has to be number 14 to get it. And I am sorry to say that the observatory owns all of the pairs in the whole tri-state area. We bought them all. They're hard to get. But don't use anything lower than 14 for the eclipse. It's not safe.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And Dean said they're available at the Cincinnati Observatory. We want to encourage, just like Kelly said earlier in the program, that, you know, it is not safe to stare at the sun. You know, you're tempted to look at the sun, and you don't really have any pain receptors there in your retina. And so, you know, your body tells you to look away. You need to look away, even if it's just that tiny little sliver of sunlight.
Now, the pinhole cameras, again, that's just you punch a pinhole in a piece of paper.
Yes.
You have your back to the sun. You hold the pinhole up to the sun, right?
Then
you take something that can be a screen, another piece of paper. Am I picturing that right?
Mm-hmm.
And that'll give you a nice image on that piece of paper.
Yeah, so you just separate the hole from another piece of paper and project the image down. You said it just right. Have your back to the sun when doing that, because we don't want you to put a hole in a piece of paper and look through the hole at the sun. Don't do that. Have your back to the sun. Let the light come through the hole onto the ground.
And let's take one last question here. This one from Tom. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I just want to ask, if you're in the path of, you know, total blockage or whatever, total eclipse, according to NASA's website, it sounds like you can actually look at it for the couple minutes if it's totally, absolutely, totally blocked. Is that the case?
That is the one time you can actually look at it. So even if there's a little sliver of sunlight, you cannot. But when it's total eclipse, totality, then you can look at it for those 2.5 minutes or so. That's the cool part. You just take the glasses off and stare right at it. But that's it.
Otherwise, don't do this.
A peak of sun comes out the other side, that's over. You got to put the glasses on.
Wes and Dean, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Wes Ryle, who manages the BB&T Observatory at Thomas More College and Cincinnati Observatory Assistant Director and Outreach Astronomer and co-host of the PBS series Stargazers, Dean Regas.